Today's podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. Allergy season is here, and that means one thing. You need the Thunderstorm. Save on their lowest price with code word Howie at EdenPure.com.
She's the Boston Herald's wittiest wordsmith, the last woman standing at the Whiskey Priest. Once a very legitimate magazine that we definitely didn't make up named her the Michael Jordan of radio. Wait, don't you think we're laying it on a little thick here, Grace?
Just stick to the script.
Oh, okay. Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. Just a couple of updates here. Shots were fired. There was a drive-by shooting caught on live TV in George Floyd Square in Minneapolis. As a reporter was talking about reforming the police during a commemorative Tuesday morning event for the one-year anniversary of George Floyd's murder, onlookers said they heard numerous shots fired. Police said one person arrived at a local hospital with a gunshot wound. We will keep you posted on that. Just another quick update here. The White House Biden-Putin summit set for June 16th in Geneva, or as Biden would say, the Biden-Clinton summit has been set. So we have that to look forward to. I wonder if this time Biden's going to look at Putin in the eyes and tell him he doesn't think he has a soul or whatever. Whatever it was that he said, it wasn't very nice, but that's okay. I mean, it's Putin after all.
Well, he's going to look somebody and say that. It might not be Putin. It might be a houseplant or something.
Yeah, like Mr. Magoo. It'd
be a guy at the drive-thru. Who knows?
Sir, this is a Wendy's. Donald Trump came out with a statement.
Baby.
Donald Trump came out with a statement today. He said, Now everybody is agreeing that I was right when I very early on called Wuhan as the source of COVID-19, sometimes referred to as the China virus. To me, it was obvious from the beginning, but I was badly criticized as usual. Now they're all saying he was right. Thank you. They're not saying he was right. They would rather pour. I'm not even going to try to say what they would rather do than ever say Trump was right. They're going to try everything they can to avoid saying that.
It's amazing. The guy's been off social media for, 6 months? He's been out of the White House for about the same time and still has yet to be wrong about something he said.
I saw an article today, Jared, speaking of that, that said, Donald Trump has a bad game of golf. That's the best you guys can do now? What is Jim Acosta hiding in the bushes? Watching one, he's like, okay, so he bogeyed that. All right, I'm going to add that into the column for the week. Joe Biden has unleashed a cringeworthy video with a YouTuber. So if you were thinking, wow, this is going to be like the Obama administration 2.0, it is so much worse. I mean, Obama had a little bit of class. He made BuzzFeed videos. These are just Joe Biden and Dr. Fauci sitting and talking to beauty influencers. This person is a male beauty vlogger. And this is what he had to ask Joe Biden. Cut 7.
But, for my last question, President Biden, because I am a beauty guru myself, I do have to ask, if you were to be stranded on a desert island and you had to bring one product with you, a skincare product that you might really love, what would it be?
I was hoping you'd say if I could bring one person I really love.
one product.
Not that
Other than my wife. Look, I happen to be Irish. So I think my wife, before I headed to that island, would tell me that you better bring some sunscreen. And I think that's the one product I would bring is sunscreen.
That's what I was hoping you were going to say. I'm not going to lie. I was hoping you would say that. So I'm very, very glad to hear that. Sunscreen is very important.
Oh. Jared, I don't have anything left to give these videos. I mean, it's just so bad. Remember when Trump had Dave Portnoy in at the White House and did an interview with him? It just shows you the difference here. Joe Biden's getting interviewed by all these YouTube influencers about sunscreen. It's just...
I'd like to see him do a sit-down interview with, an unaccompanied minor at the border, perhaps?
Yeah, or maybe a Keystone Pipeline worker.
That would be good.
That would be really cool. But then again, it's so nice to hear that he's Irish for the 1,000th time. We know.
I can say quite clearly.
We get it. We get it. All right. So this is something you had to have known was coming down upon us. There's going to be a lot of virtue signaling now because some people are vaccinated and some people aren't vaccinated. And how are we supposed to know the difference? What are we supposed to depend on the honor system? Well, we have the solution. There will be vaccinated jewelry now. It's a thing because, and according to scarymommy.com, vaccinated jewelry is a thing because we want people to know we're not bleeps.
Republicans?
Bleeps is a swear.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, for them, it's interchangeable. The word that I'm bleeping out because I don't want to get fined by the FCC.
And we appreciate that.
You could just throw in Republicans. I'm sure for them, it would have the same meaning. But yeah, there's all this. It says vaccinated and you wear it. They're like little dog tags. Some of them are $20. Some of them are $35. There, you know, you can get it from a lot of different sites and they all just have, you know, different ways of telling the world that you're vaxxed.
I'm going to be very careful about agreeing with Marjorie Taylor Greene, but remember when she said Biden's mark of the beast? This is what she was talking about. People actually marking themselves as being vaccinated.
Should we get ones that are little pieces of jewelry that say Neanderthal in cursive, in gold cursive?
Put them on a big stone like the Flintstones, like Wilma's necklace?
Yes. I think that could be very cool. It's absolutely insane. And also, Jared, very quickly here, I do have a royal update. It's a very small royal update, but I think people will enjoy this.
I wish a lot of luck to Harry. He's going to need it.
The famously insane European monarchies of the 19th and 20th centuries.
Hello, cheeky. You is much fitter than you look in them coins.
All right. So Prince Harry's been doing all of these. I don't know why we're still calling him Prince Harry. He's not a prince any longer.
The artist formerly known as Prince Harry.
Thank you. The Duke of Sussex, 36, he has been doing a series with Apple TV where he embarrasses his grandmother even further. She probably didn't think it was possible, but he is here to prove her wrong. No, and I don't want to make fun of him. He's talking about his mental health, and the man has had incredible struggles in his life. I mean, just what happened to Princess Diana alone. I'm not trying to make light of any of that. But it is interesting because some of the things he has said, remember when he did his first interview with Meghan with Oprah, and there were a lot of things where people said, well, that's not true. Like Meghan said, oh, we got married before the actual ceremony. So then people started going, wait a second. So we just paid X amount of taxpayer dollars or not dollars. We're in London. But they said we paid all this money for you guys to get married before the wedding. That turned out to be false. So there were things, there were inconsistencies that weren't adding up. Well, there's another one. Prince Harry, in his recent interview, claimed he was never able to ride a bike with his dad, Prince Charles, but photos have resurfaced of the royal doing just that many years ago. During his and Meghan Markle's bombshell interview with Oprah Winfrey in March, Harry listed bike riding as one of the many perks of living in California. And he said that he's able to ride Archie have Archie on the bike with him. And he said, which is something I was never able to do when I was young. I can seat him on the back and he's got his arms out and he's like, whoa. However, several photos from Harry's past that popped up online this week show that he was freely able to ride on the back of his father's bike several times as a child. Not just once.
Yeah, baby. Yeah.
Just interesting. You know, nowadays it's like we have everything lives on the internet. Every photo of this person is everywhere. So you can't lie about something like that. You just can't do it. Speaking of egomaniacs, Andrew Cuomo was talking yesterday in one of his bizarre press conferences where he asks questions and answers them and everyone just stands around and goes, oh my God, I can't believe he's still doing this. And he has a new way. And I don't know, Jared, maybe this is because all of the COVID tests are being used up by his friends and family, but he has a new way of figuring out your risk of COVID. Cut 11.
Because it comes down to our behavior as individuals and our behavior as a community. You tell me how you act and what you do, and I'll tell you your likelihood of catching COVID.
Oh, is he considered an expert now?
Hey, I don't put old people in nursing homes when they're infected. Am I going to catch COVID for, I don't know, you know, murdering thousands of New Yorkers?
Jared, that's a good question. I will get back to you on that.
I also don't offer to play strip poker with people I work with.
Yeah, I also don't hug and kiss people and hold their faces centimeters away from my mouth at all times. He was bragging about, you know, hugging clergymen during COVID. There's a lot of things that we could say to Andrew Cuomo. Hey, that might get you COVID. Your risk is going up. Maybe he could tell his brother, you know, traveling from New York City to the Hamptons while you're sick with COVID and then getting in fights with people outside about not wearing a mask, you're risking COVID. Your risk is higher. That's all these interesting.
You keep meatballs in your jacket?
All right. When we get back, we have a lot more to talk about. And we have Stephen Miller coming up at 1:30. I'm super pumped about that. But before we go, I got to let you know that spring is in the air. I mean, this weekend, summer was in the air. It's starting to get hot.
Awesome.
It's awesome. You can just smell it in the air. The grass is smelling good. The trees are out. The flowers are out. And it's just beautiful. And after a long, dreary, and depressing winter, thank you, Dr. Fauci, my prescription for all of you is a stay at the Follinsby Inn on the shores of Kezar Lake in North Sutton, New Hampshire. I'm going to say this very slow. Follinsby Inn. It's my favorite lakeside getaway. Picture yourself waking up in the morning and looking out to the diamond reflections of Kezar Lake, where you're boating, swimming, or just relaxing with a book. It's great for family gatherings, a personal retreat, or a romantic getaway. Reserve one of their 17 unique historic guest rooms, each with a private bath, and they have AC. That was something that Dennis told us last time he was on. That sold out really quickly. But if you want to check out Follinsby Inn, go to follinsbyinn.com, spelled Follansbee. Don't forget, they have amazing breakfast. So when you go, go hungry, because you are going to be stuffed. I mean, the food is just amazing. Make sure you check them out, follinsbyinn.com. We will be back. We'll take a couple of your calls here before we go to our guest at 1:30, 844-500-4242. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley. Follow Grace on Twitter at @G_Curley.
Today's poll question is brought to you by CapeLily.com. 100% natural soaps, perfect for sensitive skin, handcrafted in small batches with Cape Cod sea salt. Buy local and save your skin with these moisturizing, chemical-free soaps. Love your soap, love your skin. I really love this soap. I have very sensitive skin, particularly if my skin gets too dry and it can get very itchy. This soap, because it doesn't have any fragrances, and it smells good. I'm not sure if I'm using the technical term, but it doesn't have any of those fake fragrances that can irritate your skin. It's a really wonderful product. Jared and I have both already gone through each of our bars. I have a few extra that I'm excited about. So I'm on to the oatmeal bar now, but I really love it. I encourage everyone to check it out. Just try one, and I promise you, you'll end up trying more. Go to CapeLily.com. That's Lily with two L's, CapeLily.com. Jared, what is the poll question, and what are the results thus far?
Which publication is a bigger embarrassment, The New York Times or The Washington Post?
All right, so I want to give people the accurate information here so you can make this decision. And this is just based off today. Of course,
the first time accurate information will be associated with either of those publications.
You're welcome, everyone. Congrats. So you can obviously make this decision based off your entire experience with these publications. But for today, to just put it in perspective, the New York Times has a piece by Michelle Goldberg where she writes, "Attacks on Jews over Israel are a gift to the right." I don't need to explain to people why that is a horrendous headline. Because what she should be saying, or what most sane people would be saying, are attacks on Jews over Israel are wrong, are terrible, need to stop. You know, people might want to speak out against this. But instead it's, no, they're a gift to the right. Because the right's going to seize and they're going to pounce and they're going to weaponize. But keep in mind, at the Washington Post, you also have Glenn Kessler, who put out a piece today where he said, timeline, how the Wuhan lab leak theory suddenly became credible. And Glenn walks you through a timeline when really all you need to know is that when this original theory was floated by Donald Trump and Ted Cruz and Tom Cotton, Glenn Kessler was debunking. He was there to stomp and crush out these conspiracy theories, these unhinged, fringe, right-wing, nut job conspiracy theories. And now he's walking you through how we got to this sudden, unexpected turn. And I do want to read one piece here. Because Libby Emmons, you guys know I love Libby. She's from the Post-Millennial. She actually read Glenn Kessler's piece. Most of us sane people, we just kind of retweet the headlines. But someone has to actually read it. And today that was Libby. And she reads it and she breaks down Kessler's timeline. And this is my favorite part. Kessler's next point on the timeline of how this theory attained credibility. January 20th, Joe Biden becomes president. It is only after Biden becomes president that mainstream media in the U.S. became willing to talk about this theory. Kessler and others linked the lab leak theory to a theory that the virus was intentionally made, used it to discredit the lab leak theory, used it to discredit Trump, his administration, and the State Department, and now they're singing a different tune altogether. So I don't know, Jared. It's a tough call. I'm going to say... Oh, I'm switching it up. I'm going to say Washington Post. I always switch in the second hour.
Washington Post polling at 23%. 77% say the New York Times is a bigger embarrassment.
All right. Are you ready for this? So this is the fact checking from Glenn Kessler way back when in April 2020. Trump said, I will tell you more and more we're hearing the story that the coronavirus emerged from a Wuhan lab. And I have to read Kessler's voice as like this nerd because all these fact checkers are really hall monitors. You know what Toby Young calls them? Offense archaeologists. They just dig through things until they get offended. This is what Glenn Kessler said about that comment. This is doubtful. A fact checker investigation found the balance of the scientific evidence strongly supports the conclusion that the new coronavirus emerged from nature, be it the Wuhan seafood market or somewhere else. Too many unexpected coincidences would have had to take place for it to have escaped from the lab. Really? I'm going to say too many unexpected coincidences would have had to take place for this not to be from the lab. The Wuhan lab that is doing research on deadly viruses happens to be the place in Wuhan where the virus could have started. That to me feels like the least coincidental assumption you could come to. And here we go again. Trump says, yes, I have. I have seen evidence the virus came from a Wuhan lab. There's a lot of theories, but yeah, we have people looking at it very strongly. Again, this is doubtful. A fact checker investigation found he didn't even bother to switch it up. He just copy and pasted the same thing. Kessler's full statement in May 2020 read, the balance of the scientific evidence strongly supports the conclusion that the new coronavirus emerged from nature, be it a Wuhan market or somewhere else. The Chinese government has not been willing or able to provide information that would clarify lingering questions about any possible role played by either the Wuhan lab, blah, 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 blah. And now he's explained to us the timeline of how it became credible. The timeline. We don't need you to explain the timeline, Glenn. We don't go based off your timeline. We go based off Tom Cotton's timeline and Senator Ted Cruz's timeline and Donald Trump's timeline. And Dr. Scott Atlas's timeline. I don't go by Glenn Kessler's timeline because Glenn Kessler has no idea what he's doing.
But did the Wuhan lab own any land in Georgia?
Very good question.
Why do we not know this?
Yeah, no, exactly. Did the Wuhan, you know, what's going on with the Wuhan lab? There's more to that tale.
Tell me about the Wuhan lab's grandfather.
It's absolutely embarrassing for both publications. All right, we'll be back with Stephen Miller at Red Stees. Do not go anywhere. This is going to be awesome.
L-
live from the Aviva Trattoria studio.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. If you guys listen to this show on a daily basis, you know that I read tweets from Stephen Miller probably once an hour. His Twitter handle is at Red Stees. He writes for The Spectator as well as a number of publications. And I'm very lucky he's joining me right now. Stephen, thank you so much for coming on the Grace Curley Show.
Hi, Grace. How are you?
All right. So the piece is Don't Let the Media Get Away with U-Turning on the Lab Leak Theory. I love this piece because you break down the hypocrisy of all of these people like Glenn Kessler now switching it up suddenly. But the part of it that I really found interesting was when you said the lab leak theory started gaining more traction right around the same time that questions of the United States government funding of Eco Health Alliance may have led to the gain of function research at the Wuhan Institute. Now, do you think that those two are connected? Because I couldn't help but notice the timing of Dr. Fauci suddenly saying this could be possible.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, and I'm not trying to kind of allude to kind of a grand conspiracy, but there hasn't been any real new revelations surrounding this lab leak theory. All of the circumstantial evidence has been out there for, you know, over a year, and the only kind of new breaking information was in the Wall Street Journal this past week, where it said three members of the Wuhan Institute, you know, the Virology Institute, had to be hospitalized with respiratory problems back in November of 2019. And roughly right about when that report came out is when Anthony Fauci backtracked and said, you know, I'm not so sure that the lab theory is a kooky conspiracy anymore. Well, so it is interesting that the timing of kind of people starting to backtrack on this came roughly right on the heels of these questions about gain of function. And Fauci's kind of playing wordplay with gain of function. He's trying to make people believe that when Rand Paul brings up gain of function, when someone brings up gain of function, it's to engineer a bioweapon. Well, that's not necessarily what gain of function is. Gain of function is just the manipulation of proteins in a virus to test the susceptibility of human transmission. So it's and they do gain of function to find vaccines for this kind of stuff. So it's a perfectly natural research. I want to say again, it's a perfectly natural way to research viruses, I guess. And you have Fauci who's kind of hemming and hawing about Rand Paul's intentions when the intentions don't matter. All that matters is if they were actually doing it.
Right. And I have to say, and this is just because I'm so disgusted with the mainstream media in general, but the part of this that drives me the craziest, like, take Glenn Kessler, for example. You were one of the first people to kind of dunk on him for his old headlines about the lab leak theory. He was one of the, you know, this has been debunked crowd. And I just, now they're trying to break down for us why they didn't give it any time, or why they didn't do their jobs, why they weren't skeptical, why they didn't ask questions. And Glenn Kessler is breaking down a timeline, and I'm thinking to myself, well, we know the timeline. We know that people like Tom Cotton were talking about this a year ago. So we don't need to be convinced that you had some grander idea of why you weren't going to get into this. It was just kind of, it was just because it would have helped Trump too much, or they thought it would have helped Trump.
Yeah, I don't know if it's about helping Trump. It's simply because Trump and Pompeo stated it, and Tom Cotton stated it, and the media simply just wrote it off simply because of the people who were out here talking about it. Maggie Haberman admitted as much this morning on CNN, where she said, you know, the Trump administration said this, but they didn't provide evidence, so it became politicized. So they're blaming Trump for this, as opposed to, as journalists, instead of, you know, what the Washington Post did, which was called, what, when Tom Cotton floated this, they called it a debunked conspiracy theory. So as opposed to looking into it and looking at, you know, the claim, they simply just wrote it off. And it's the very definition of implicit bias. And as I stated, nothing has really changed. There hasn't been some grand revelation that this could or could not have come from a lab, again, other than the three workers. But all of the information about safety levels at this lab in Wuhan, that was in an intelligence report in 2018. The fact that it's 9 miles from the supposed wet market where, you know, China and the World Health Organization said that this all stemmed from. The problem is there's no bat species out here flying around with COVID-19. That's one of the other problems. They have not produced a single species specimen or sample in over the last year. And then, of course, you have China, who is not allowing access to this lab. Any investigations that happened were done with just interviewing people who worked there. Well, as we know, China's not real big on independent people going and giving their opinions. So we know that these opinions were likely coached and coerced. And like I said, the media just simply wrote all of this stuff off because they accepted China and the World Health Organization's official kind of standing at that point. And then today you have, again, Kessler in particular says, well, suddenly it's credible. Well, no, it's not suddenly credible. It's always been credible. We don't know if it came from a lab or not, but it was the fact that they just wrote it off simply because it was, you know, Tom Cotton saying it or it was Mike Pompeo saying it. It shows kind of this, again, implicit bias that they're going off of, and now they're backed into a corner. If they would have done their due diligence, we wouldn't be sitting here today, and people, you know, people like me wouldn't be running around spiking a football on their head.
Yeah, no, exactly. And something I also noticed today was Glenn Greenwald. He wrote, you know, he was commenting on this situation and was saying, you know, the media needs to learn lessons from this. And I noticed that you replied and said, there's not going to be any lessons learned here. And I want your take on that, because I agree with you. And I'm almost starting to think it's because in order to learn a lesson, you'd have to feel like regret for what you've done, or you'd have to feel some sort of shame. And it doesn't seem, when I watch John Berman and Maggie Haberman, that there's any sort of self-reflection.
Well, no, there's not going to be self-reflection for a couple of reasons. One, that would have to mean giving the Trump administration some credit, and they are not going to do that under any circumstances whatsoever, because they would look at this as a win for the right. They would look at it as a win for the Trump administration. Trump is then going to release a statement on his blog and, you know, kind of make their day a living hell, and they don't want to have to deal with that on Twitter. So it's easier to just kind of dig in and continue to say, well, you know, Trump's a crazy person over here, and this is what's happening, and Pompeo's a liar, and Tom Cotton's a liar, as opposed to, you know, coming out and saying, look, we got this wrong. We should have examined this further, which is kind of what they're doing. And I noted with the Washington Post fact check, there's no suddenly credible. The only thing that's different is administrations have changed, and certain people on the left, kind of in their social circles, are now starting to accept this theory. Don McNeil Jr., who was the science reporter fired by the New York Times, had, you know, 7,000 words on this on his Medium post, and I would encourage people to read it. There's a lot of technical information that will make your eyes glaze over, but that's another good example where it's only that the right people now are saying it.
Right.
And they're not going to learn lessons from this, because, again, that would mean giving a win to Trump, and they are not going to do that under any circumstances. And again, this is kind of an issue of pride with them. It's, you know, we were right about everything, and you're wrong, and you have to be wrong, when they haven't gotten much right about this pandemic. And Trump certainly did himself no favors with his rhetoric, and he paid for that, I believe, in the election. But when it comes down to policies, and it comes down to getting the vaccine out there in warp speed, and now we're looking into, you know, the World Health Organization, when he said, we're not funding you anymore because you're in the pockets of China, these all look to be really good steps, and the Biden administration is now undoing all of that and putting the WHO back in charge, as if they're going to come out and, you know, be able to coerce China to admit what's going on, and that's not going to happen.
Yeah, and I think when I'm listening to what you're saying, and you're absolutely right, Trump was right about a lot of this stuff as far as the pandemic goes. It's funny, though, because part of me is like, wow, he ends up being right about a lot of this. But then another part of me goes, well, he was just using common sense. You know, like, this big virus happens. It starts in Wuhan. You have a Wuhan lab that, like you said, is probably doing gain of function research. He's really just connecting the dots that most sane people would connect. Their problem was that they were deranged and didn't want to go anywhere near this.
Yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it kind of looking into, and I believe that this is why the Biden administration doesn't want to press China on this, because it's too hard, and it would cause too much of an incident, you know, to find out, you know, how did this happen? How did this, you know, once every 100 years pandemic happen that shut down a global economy, led to hundreds of thousands of deaths, and we're okay with just kind of letting them off the hook because they tell us that somebody ate a bat somewhere. And, you know, you have even people in our media who said, well, who cares? It doesn't matter. Well, it does matter. We need to figure out how and why this happened. We need to figure out why the United States is outsourcing this kind of research and this kind of stuff to safe, you know, bio labs in China that have a history of safety problems. And that's something that needs to be corrected, and it's something that needs to be explained. And Dr. Fauci certainly does need to actually explain his role in the funding that went through this. I mean, there's a lot of information here that, again, if you're listeners, again, they kind of just tune out. So it's not Fauci was personally funding this lab with anything, but United States grant money went to EcoHealth Alliance, and all they do is they go and they collect viral samples in China, and then they ship those samples to the lab. And even Anthony Fauci admitted, once they're in the lab in China, we have no idea what's happening there. We don't know the safety protocols. We don't know what kind of manipulation they're doing. We don't know, you know, are people contracting this and then they walk out and they get on a subway? So these are all questions that absolutely need to be answered. And I don't think the Biden administration has the fortitude to do it because they don't want to risk the relationship with China.
I agree. I'm speaking with Stephen Miller from Spectator, and we will have to wrap it up in a minute. But Stephen, I wanted to get your take on what I thought was a really breathtaking headline. I mean, I saw this morning and I thought that cannot be real. I mean, there's no way. And I've seen a lot of pouncing, seizing, weaponizing headlines in my time. But this one from the New York Times, Michelle Goldberg, she wrote, "Attacks on Jews over Israel are a gift to the right." What is your take on this headline?
Yeah, the New York Times has their eye on the ball, as usual, that the real problem with Jews being attacked in the streets of liberal cities like New York is the fact that it could lead to Nancy Pelosi losing her speakership. That's their logic. And it's offensive. It's something where I would just say, this is why you don't subscribe to the New York Times. This goes beyond bias. I think that this is kind of an agenda. It's the idea that everything that all of these attacks have to be viewed through a politicized lens, and it could lead to Republicans gaining power. So you need to stop beating up Jews in the street, because, guys, it's going to lead to Republicans being proven right, and that is not the issue here, and it shouldn't be the issue. Jews being attacked in the street in modern-day America is something that needs to stop, and you shouldn't be looking at political consequences of doing that. And I feel like this is not something that I should have to be lecturing a newspaper on in the year 2021.
And I saw Stephen, that somebody, some blue check mark is now saying, well, headlines don't give the full story, and the right is trying to spin
right.
This headline. Like, we didn't force you to come up with this headline. You guys wrote it.
Yeah, and as someone who does have a byline, as someone who does write things, a headline to a story, and as a writer, and you know this, you don't always come up with the headlines, but if you don't like it, you have a power to change it, and you don't blame someone for reading a headline and then going, you know, well, that looks bad, that looks as bad as it says, and that's not up to the audience, so you blaming the audience is not going to gain you any favors. You as a writer have the control over your byline. And so if you think that it's not fair, you need to go tell the New York Times to change it, and they're not changing the headline.
That's going to be the headline tomorrow. Offensive headlines are a gift to the right. We need to stop with all of these offensive headlines. Stephen
right.
Miller, thank you so much for joining the Grace Curley Show. Stephen, where can people read all of your stuff at Spectator?
You can follow my Twitter at Red Steez. I have a link to all of my work there, as well as my podcast.
Perfect. Thank you so much, sir. Stephen Miller, the best ever on Twitter. Make sure you follow him. The frenzied real estate market is causing bidding wars across certain segments. Real estate brokers are holding calls for highest and best offers because demand is so high. It really is. It's crazy right now. I have a couple friends who were trying to buy houses, Jared, if you can believe this, on the South Shore leading up to the summer, some Cape houses, and the market is just, it's on fire. How do you know as a seller that you have realized all of the money for your property, and if you sold under the best terms? You wouldn't hire a refrigerator repairman to fix your valuable car. So when selling real estate, let the bidding war experts for over 45 years sell your property quickly, contingency-free, and for true market value. Recent real estate auctions for Howie Carr listeners have attracted as many as 30 qualified cash-ready buyers. Cash ready. That is music to my ears. Battling for their properties. At the end of your auction, you will know that no money was left on the table. Remember, when you sell your real estate in the usual way with a broker, you pay the commission. But in a J.J. Manning auction, the buyer pays. That saves you, the seller, thousands of dollars right there. Whether residential, commercial, or land, J.J. Manning can get your property sold now. To learn more on how to get your property sold quickly and contingency-free, contact Charlie Gill at 800-521-0111 or jjmanning.com. With over 16,000 sales and satisfied clients, you can be the next one. Call Charlie today at 800-521-0111 or go to jjmanning.com. We will be back. This is the Grace Curley Show.
You can call her late for dinner. Just don't call her Gracie. It's the Grace Curley Show. Grace Curley. She's here for the love.
Would I rather be feared or loved? Easy, both. I want people to be afraid of how much they love me.
Welcome back to the Grace Curley Show. All right, so this might be a little repetitive because I have told you little snippets of this, but I finally broke through the paywall. Don't worry, I didn't pay for anything. I just, you know, opened up a private browser and managed to grab the Washington Post story about Joe Biden, weightlifting Gatorade and birthday calls. And this is actually, the summaries of this article did not do it justice. It is totally brutal. They walk through, you know, some of his schedule, and they talk about how he revealed a glimpse of his private schedule on the back of the index card he keeps in his right breast pocket to track the nation's COVID deaths. 9:30 a.m., joint video tapings with the First Lady. 9:45 a.m., proceed to Oval Office. 9:50 a.m., hold for Ron. That's Ron Klain. And then he ticks through them with a slash from a black pen. Check, check, check. The extreme scripting and almost surreal regimentation that define Biden's days from his arrival in the Oval Office just after 9 a.m. to his brief walk back to the White House residence for dinner with his wife by 7 p.m.
Oh, this is going to sound wonky.
More than most public figures, Biden has sought to keep one foot in the normal world. From commuting home to Delaware on Amtrak to phoning ordinary Americans to attending mass. Biden's typical day reveals a creature of habit with well-worn routines and favorite treats.
Emphasis on creature.
From orange Gatorade to chocolate chip cookies, a tactile politician eager to escape the Washington bubble, who meets privately with people who write him letters.
Definitely tactile.
That's for damn sure. And the patriarch of a sprawling Irish Catholic clan who abruptly interrupts high-level meetings to take calls from family members. It marks a sharp contrast with former President Donald Trump, whose days often ran both early and late with tweets that were frequently angry or inflammatory. Yeah, they hate Trump, blah, 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 blah. Biden begins his mornings with a workout that often includes lifting weights, and he meets regularly with a trainer. They talk a little bit here about his Peloton, which you all know about. I like this part. The president then walks a short distance to the Oval Office, usually carrying his brown leather briefcase in a mix of binders and folders. We know he's old. You don't have to keep telling us. We get it. Like, they throw in the saltwater taffy in case we forgot that he's ancient.
With his pork pie hat and his spats ready to go for the day.
Newspapers here! To critics, Biden's public schedule can seem notably lighter compared to his predecessors. Often with just one or two brief public appearances a day and weekends at his family home. A LID, meaning no further public activities, is often called early in the day. Oh, God.
None of this is good.
I know, but they're trying their hardest, Jared, to make it sound so romantic and folksy. There's a lot more to this. It gets stranger. Like, him and Kamala look at a slideshow of themselves while they eat lunch. There's more to unpack here. We have Toby Leary from Cape Gun coming up next. So send in your gun question, 63566. Start the text with the word grace. We'll be right back.